Tonight's topic is service as practice. We can practice meditation, sitting, walking, doing work, and in our whole lives, in everything we do. I was thinking this afternoon how wonderful it is down in Redwood City at Insight Meditation Center. They have half-day retreats on Wednesday mornings. And every now and then I lead that half-day retreat. But I also go there as part of my own practice, because we get sitting and walking, sitting, then a little dharmat, 15 minutes, and then a work session where we clean up the temple. And then there's a little closing ceremony. Everyone introduces themselves, and we dedicate the merit. And then it's a potluck lunch together. We pull out the tables, and we sit and talk to each other. And at that point, we're all kind of mindful, you know, and a lot of the discussion is about Dharma and practice, but then, you know, well, how's your kids doing, and just being friendly with each other. And it's a delightful transition. I think of it in terms of, you know, that cartoon where there's a fish coming out of the water, and then there's a little mammal that's walking along, and then a monkey and a chimp and something that kind of looks like a hominid, and then one or two humans. Well, we can carry this sort of evolution of mindfulness right into 24/7. It's a jump from work meditation to work, you know, whatever it is we do for a living, or dealing with disputes in the family or among friends or whatever. A wonderful missing link in this evolution of practice is service. I've been drawn to it all my life. My experience with service was revolutionized by my meditation practice, because when I did it, my first service experience was set up to be a practice. It was with the Zen Hospice Project. So they trained us 40 hours before we ever started doing the service. And then there would be meetings every time we were there to sort of reinforce doing it mindfully. And then there would be training, you know, and we just had all of this wonderful support so that we could do the service as a practice. And this is happening in this Sangha, actually. Because, as you probably all know, there are people who are helping Pauletta deal with her cancer. And we have a support group that has met to help the people who are helping do that mindfully as part of the practice, so that it supports the spiritual growth of each person who's doing the service. So that's kind of the milieu for what I'm talking about, that it is intended to be an opportunity for spiritual growth because it's done mindfully. The critical difference between volunteer work and service as practice is this intention that it be so. And we do it largely by keeping some part of our attention on our somatic experience. And we do this when we're sitting in meditation. We find something that's going on in the body that's always going to be there, and we keep bringing our attention back to it. Now, one of the wonderful things that meditation, sitting, and meditation in service will do for us is remind us of our true nature. Because of the way our eyes and our brains work, there's this illusion that we have that we end at the skin or the eyes. And on the other side is the world that's populated with people and things. And we know when we're born, it's instinctual, that there are things out there that we need to support our lives. And so we grow up with this idea that we're separate and the important stuff is out there and we need to get it. Well, that might make us pretty good at staying alive, but it doesn't make us happy because it makes us feel isolated. And we are missing a deep, deep connection with all that is. Basically, you know, to put it in terms of internal, external, we're not totally connected with the planet, with others. When we're paying attention to our breathing, we are watching the outside coming in, becoming part of us, and then going back out. And we see this inner connection. We may not register it cognitively that way, but that's what we're watching. And when we do service, we further break down this delusion of a separation between us and everything else, everyone else. So we hold the attention inside the body to maintain mindfulness so that we're aware of what's going on inside as we deal with what's going on outside. It's really simple, but it's a trick. It's a trick we have to learn. And that's why with Zen Hospice, there was 40 hours of training. And we would sit together at the beginning of every shift and then again at the end of every shift. And we would exchange information with each other about how it felt to be there. How it feels to be there is really critical in maintaining that mindful connection. And that's one of the reasons why I found working with people who are very ill to be really satisfying for me on a spiritual level. And in fact, I've just signed up, gone through the training, I've got my badge. Of course, I've managed already to lose it. But I'm ready to go to Kaiser as a volunteer and sit with people who are dying, those who don't have family or friends in the area, and would otherwise be alone. Now, to avoid getting really burned out and getting trapped in ideas of, oh, I'm doing this in order to be good, I'm doing this to help others, but to remember why I'm doing this, I need to stay in touch with the way it feels moment to moment. And particularly in the hospice ward, particularly in Laguna Honda Hospital, there were some things that were going on inside me that were really difficult. There were distressing odors and sights, and what I could see people going through could be very distressing. And what I had to offer was my presence. And that means I had to really be there. And that meant I had to be attentive to what I was feeling. And the ironic thing was, that made it bearable. Because when you pay that much attention to anyone, it's comforting to them. Same thing is true when we pay that much attention to our own experience. It's like holding the baby. We're holding our own emotions tenderly, with compassion. So that may not seem terribly relevant if, for example, our service is coming a little early to the Sangha meetings and helping shuffle things around so it's set up. But here's where we can make this work for us. When I entered the door of the hospice, I had a little ceremony. I made this a sacred time in a sacred space. And I resolved that for that period of time that I was doing service, I was going to let go of my preferences. Now, mind you, when I started, I was practicing Zen, and that's kind of a buzzword, or it was anyway, in the Sangha I was a member of. No preferences. Basically, it means letting go. And we hear this over and over, let it go. So having a period of time when we have made this decision, I'm not going to do anything just because I want to do it, but because it's responding to the needs of others. So I'm letting go of my own preferences there. And I'm letting the needs of the task decide what I'm going to do. And the result is a wonderful sense of freedom. It's like running on metta, on loving kindness. And to feel that, of course, we need to be in touch with what's going on. To be able to let go, we have to be in touch with what's going on inside ourselves, somatically, the way we literally feel during that time. This ability to stay connected with a somatic experience is critical as you go up that evolutionary chain through the hominids to the totally mindful person. Mindfulness is awareness of the present moment, the experience as it unfolds. The mind can be in another time zone, in another place, but the body is always right here and right now. So if we stay in touch with the body, we can remain mindful. And my experience has always been, regardless of the service, whether it's with people who are dying or in jail or substance abuse or planting live oaks in a riparian habitat. You know, if I can remember, I'm doing this because I love our planet. And because this is what the whole ecosystem needs here. You know, and I could connect with the birds that would have trees to live in and yada yada yada. Totally transform the experience from dig, put it in, cover it up, to one of a delightful feeling of an open heart that was being fed by the effort that I made. So service can be quite pleasant and gratifying. And it's ruled by the divine abodes, in Pali, the Brahma Viharas. And I love to tell this Zen story, which means it doesn't come from the suttas. Buddha was walking along one day, and some rich guys came up to him and said, "We really like what you're teaching. We think you've got it. But, gee, we can't really shave our heads, throw away all of our clothes, and wear just a long sheet wrapped around our bodies carrying a bowl to beg for food with. We've got a kingdom to run, or fields to cultivate, or whatever. We've got family and business to take care of. So are there any shortcuts? Is there any way for us to get to heaven without having to become monks? And Buddha said, well, as a matter of fact, yes, there are four states of mind that you can be in that are like dwelling in heaven. The divine abodes. Oh, great, said the rich men. Tell us about them. What are they? Well, there's loving kindness, which is this orientation that you have to all beings, that you care about them, you respect them, and you want the best for them. And you want it so much that you're willing to act on that. You're willing to be kind. So in English, we call it loving kindness. And if you have that orientation and you encounter a being that's suffering, then you're going to have compassion for it. And compassion may not seem like that great a thing to feel, but it is wonderful because it enables us to endure suffering. And not just the suffering of others, as horrible as that can be. It also enables us to endure our own. Because as I said just a little while ago, what we all find the most comforting is really caring attention. And the human being who's best situated to give that to us is ourselves. And if we can give that to ourselves in our suffering, it doesn't make the suffering go away, but it opens up the container for it. So if you'll imagine ink being spilled into a little glass, it's going to make it very dark. But if that ink is spilled into a large lake, it's hardly going to be visible. So compassion turns that little glass into the big lake, gives us a big space to hold it. And here's the goodie, the winning the Brahma-Vihara lottery, and that is that when loving kindness encounters another being who's delighted, who's happy, then the response is sympathetic joy. Not only do we feel their suffering, we also feel their joy. And we feel our own. It's raised to the second power, if you will. When we practice service as a practice with mindfulness, with loving kindness, with compassion, sympathetic joy, and the fourth divine abode, which is equanimity, and that's a fancy word for balance, keeping in mind when there's suffering that there are other times when there's joy, keeping in mind with the joy that it's not going to last forever. When we practice service this way, we really get to see how the Brahma-Viharas work. I can remember sitting at a bedside with someone who was really uncomfortable and feeling the compassion come up and noticing how it felt, how there was discomfort, but then recognizing it as compassion and knowing this was a divine state of mind and feeling it go through that expansion and being very grateful that I was, due to the compassion, I was able to be there fully with that person. You kind of have to do it to see this happen. And when we see how each of the divine abodes affect us and each other, it reinforces them. Sort of, once you've seen it, you'll recognize it. Once you get to know it, it's readily available to you. They get stronger. When I first started studying Buddhism, I was a little concerned because what I was reading was about cultivating the divine abodes the way we do with metta practice, just through repeating phrases and maybe looking for the way that registers somatically, you know, in our emotions, but not through action. And my introduction to them was through service. So finally, I read a book by the Dalai Lama. And what higher authority can there be but that service is an excellent way to cultivate the Brahma Viharas. When we act with kindness, that's going to nurture kindness because it feels good. It just is a delightful feeling to know that you're going to do this for someone or something, a group of people maybe, because you want to help them. Now, the equanimity comes in because you have to then let go of whether or not it actually helps. Because there are a lot of times, even planting the little acorns for the live oaks, there are a lot of them that are never going to sprout. And then there are going to be sprouts that get eaten or trampled or whatever. Only a few are going to end up being big, healthy trees. So you've got to let go of the results. There was a saying way back when, I haven't heard it in a long time, but show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. And I love it. It's just a great, you know, it almost runs through the Brahma Viharas. Don't be attached to the outcome. Recognize that the benefit, probably for the whole universe, is just in your showing up, telling the truth, doing the best you can, and then letting go. Being kind is its own reward to a large extent. And most people, unless they're totally spaced out or in their own delusion, will recognize the kindness, even if it isn't effective. Oh yes, there's something else. I want to compare service with dana. Dana is also a practice that we have, and we have it here in this Sangha, where we don't charge anything. The teaching is done as service. So just like service, when you're thinking about going over to the dana basket and making a donation, stay in touch with how you feel. How does it feel to want to give, to want to help? And then at the moment, literally, that you're letting go of whatever you put in the dana basket, how does that feel? And as you walk away, knowing that you, in this case, it is effective, you have helped. As you walk away, knowing that you've helped, how does that feel? Now, we're all funny about money, and I think it's my next Dharma talk that is going to be about what we can learn from money. So as you're practicing dana, and actually as you're doing service, you will notice that motives come up, reactions come up, that you're not so proud of. Maybe you're thinking, well, gee, they don't charge, so I don't have to give very much. And then you think, oh, I wish I hadn't thought that, or whatever. You know, nobody is watching, just you. So just learn from what's going on in there. Hold it kindly. Be compassionate. Know that it's okay to be you. And just watch. You know, I'm not ashamed of the fact that the smell in the hospice never stopped grossing me out. You know, that's just, I have a very keen sense of smell and I'm fussy about it. But I just opened my heart to it. And as the time went by, I just stopped really noticing it. And I was okay with the fact that it was a bad smell. So whatever our responses are, the practice is to watch them and learn from them and bring them as much love and kindness as we can. So thank you very much.